Okay, let's do a touch-in with Holy Spirit, and we'll invite Spirit to join us this morning. So let's just relax together and let go of any tension that we may be holding on to. And just allow yourself to relax every part of your body. And just take a deep breath. And tune into the peace of how amazing this feels. Just to let go. And join in such loving support as Spirit guides us to the truth today. And I just want to offer my gratitude for this miraculous day of revealing true perspective now. And let us recognize our playful inner child and its willingness to always be in truth. And Spirit, we are calling you in. Where two or more are joined, you are there, and I am here. And so it is. So let's open to the manual for teachers. And I am in Foundation for Inner Peace. And we're looking at page 9 in the Manual for Teachers. What are the characteristics of God's teachers?
Okay. Give me 1 minute here to find it.
Yeah, take your time.
Oh, that's right. I love that she has that book. Because I do need some clarification on some things here. And that book that you read out of. That probably is going to help for me anyway in this area. So I hope, I invite you to, you know, tell us what it may, I mean, what, how it does translate it too.
Okay. I'll open that. Okay, I'm there. Sorry. Took me a minute.
Oh, sorry.
I think I've been saying sorry a lot, and Beth, I've heard you say sorry a few times. We have to transform those sorries into everything is perfect.
Yeah.
Everything is always perfect timing, right?
It is.
You know what I just thought of, Beth, when you said sorry and I said no sorries, I thought to myself, you know what, that little space, that little time, well, whatever, there's no time, but that little space was where application may have happened in me. I felt an adjustment. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I needed that space to adjust. There was an adjustment for me. So it felt good too to take that space and adjust myself to where, to, you know, to my willingness, I guess. So it's always perfect. For whatever reason, we don't know all the time.
You're right.
Oh, I'm not right. I'm led. I feel like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I am so not, my mind is so not right, but when it's one, it feels right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Me and Debbie call that the flow state.
Yeah, that's getting on the wave and riding the wave.
Yeah.
Okay, what are the characteristics of God's teachers? Okay, so to trust. Okay, so I will, start reading and then I'll pass as I'm guided. This is the foundation on which their ability to fulfill their function rests. Perception is a result of learning. In fact, perception is learning. Excuse me, because cause and effect are never separated. The teacher of God have trust in the world. The teachers of God have trust in the world because they have learned it is not governed by the laws the world made up.
Sorry,
it is governed.
You're in the text. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're in the text.
I'm in the manual for teachers.
I'm not. I yeah.
Huh?
I don't know why, but it's not like that's not.
What's are you? What section are you in?
It was the manual for teachers, but.
What does yours start off with?
The surface traits of God's teachers are not at all alike.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, go ahead. You read that. That's the first portion. I just skipped into trust because I thought that's where you wanted to, something you wanted to talk about in there.
Maybe I missed something in the beginning, and that's why it didn't come together, maybe. I don't know. All right.
Okay.
The traits of God's teachers are not at all alike. They do not look alike to the body's eyes. They come from vastly different backgrounds. Their experiences of the world vary greatly, and their superficial personalities are quite distinct. Nor at the beginning stages of their functioning as teachers of God have they yet acquired the deeper characteristics that will establish those as what they are. I don't know if that word was those, because I'm just reading it from the phone. But God gives special gifts to his teachers because they have special roles in his plan for atonement. And I got to say it, at one minute. Boy, I love that so much. Atonement at one minute.
Mm-hmm.
Their specialness is, of course, only temporary. Set in time as a means of leading out of time. These special gifts born in the holy relationship. Toward which the teaching learning situation is geared, become characteristic of all teachers of God who have advanced in their own learning. In this respect, they are all alike. All differences among the sons of God are temporary. Nevertheless, in time, it can be said that the advanced teachers of God have the following characteristics.
Okay. Do you want to talk about anything in there?
I do. So
right,
I want to
stop. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I have to give you a little scenario. I'm dating right now, Beth. So I'm really open to the fact that everybody that I actually, for whatever reason, we've come together, even if the date is just a telephone date, or even if it goes to one date, or if it goes to multiple dates, I know I'm really open to, there's definitely something that for sure brought us together, and it's beautiful for, you know, for a teaching learning situation. And not that I'm the teacher, not that I'm the learner only, but I'm both, and so are they. And so I can really open to this, you know, beautiful concept of this. Now, the specialness, I think what it's saying is that, like, I notice that when I meet somebody, I feel right away I'm going to call it a judgment at this point, because I feel, and you know, that this is what I still do. I of course, I'd love to say that I don't do it, but I'm not at that place yet, but that's my goal, because that's my goal to not judge myself. So and naturally this is definitely a block, but I did notice that it's all okay because it's all perfect in time or whatever, perfect for me, because I realized that what I'm actually doing is I can see right away that this, and I'm not talking about whether they're appealing to me visually. There's actually a lot more that I feel that actually happens when I see them. I can see their stature. I see how they stand. I see how they're looking at me. My whole intuitive thing kicks in, and I can feel right away if this is somebody that I feel that I can that I feel that we have the same matching vibration. And I'm thinking it has to do with our personality that's temporary, our special gifts, because there's something there that when two have come together, there's an obvious reason for it, an attraction to each other. And if the teaching learning situation is coherent, then it seems that it went on to a multiple, to another date, and recognition too. So I would have said, oh, I'm just being really picky, you know, and I'm looking at their look. But now I've actually learned that it's not about a look at all, where my visual eyes would say, oh, I got to see what they look like, and, you know, then I'm going to like them. But that isn't true. Some people look really great, but you know what? You don't feel that something, that special, I'll say, that teacher learning, whatever's drawing us, okay, that's temporary. Because now we're not seeing, when we do this, we're not really seeing everybody the same, but there's still a purpose for it, because I'm going to learn that we're all the same am I describing that right?
Yeah.
That's the best articulation I could use, is something like, so now I'm like, okay, yep, there still is judgment, but it's for a purpose, because this is the place that I'm at with, you know, to bring it to level up.
Yeah, I could definitely see your willingness to be in communication or allow your mind to be host to Holy Spirit first, moving forward, versus past times. You know, allowing the ego to be host of your mind. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a willingness to be in that feeling place where you're allowing the whole Holy Spirit to come in and correct the mind and allow Holy Spirit to be host to the mind. Because of you understanding that judgment is a separation, and you truly want to join with all people in the sameness.
Mm-hmm.
The Course calls it, you know, in the sameness.
Yep.
And I do believe that you also understand. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. No, go ahead.
Oh, that you also understand that the only way to move forward in a relationship is to have a holy relationship. And it says here that born in the holy relationship, right? So how do you allow this relationship to be born in the holy relationship? Well, it's to allow the Holy Spirit to be host of your mind rather than the ego. Because the ego is what creates the judgments and the specialness.
Like there was an inevitable meeting. Him and I, it's not just something I did, but we came together at the same time, at the same place, to each other. And it's not like how the Course says that we can't choose the curriculum. We cannot choose the curriculum, but we could choose to be willing in the moment. So everybody that I actually dated, we all came together for the moment for whatever reason. And I did see them all with a real, like, same goal that I had, I really did. But how they all wanted to do it, you know what I mean? The way that they wanted to do it, I couldn't join with that, because there was something about that that wasn't it wasn't the way I wanted to do it. So, I mean, maybe it's my will, whatever, but there was something that didn't draw me to doing it that way. Like one guy, you know, he was very sexually attracted to me. And I'm my interest, and it's not right or wrong, but my interest was like, I don't feel like I can learn from that situation. I feel like I'm not, there's something I need to learn, but it's not that. So then, you know what I'm saying? So then there was another guy that just took it to really, really lighthearted fun. And you know what? That's the one that I feel like I'm going to learn the most from. Because I have a seriousness about me that, and I'm more interested in being playful and so, I don't know. Anyway, that was the one that I, and you know what? Was I attracted to him? Look, visually in the ego? No. But now, it's like everything is like so like, oh, I'm so excited. Can't wait to talk to him again. Can't wait to see him. Now I want to be exclusively dating him because I want to focus on, you know, or not even focus, but I just want to give it the opportunity to learn from it now. And I'm excited to learn, which is where I need to calm down and trust. But anyway, what do you, Beth, I'm curious what you're thinking or feeling.
And you're asking me?
I'm curious about what you got from this. Not my situation in particular, but just what's your experience with this topic that you could share with us so that we can learn.
I don't think we have enough time for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you have any input?
Are there any notes?
Oh, notes? There's just something in here about special gifts. Because they mentioned that in the first part that we read.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It just said the special gifts are the 10 characteristics, the 10 character traits described in this section, which we haven't gone through yet. That they are born in the holy relationship between teacher and pupil means that this relationship transforms the teacher into an advanced teacher, just as it transforms the pupil into a teacher. So I think it'll probably mean more once we go through the, the 10 character traits.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. I was on a conference call with David Hoffmeister, and I forget the other, I forget the host of the call, but at any rate, he spoke about, I asked him about the special function because in the course, I think that Jesus talks about the special function, and it's the only true special within the whole course. And it's interesting because I'm seeing here, mm-hmm. you know, God gives special gifts, and because they have a special role, so that's interesting to see these two words special here. But yes, I think you're right. We'll get more, moving forward because this is not mistaken. This type of special with the ego special,
right? I have a little input about that. So do you consider, which I think I may. Is this the special that why me and John are so, like, there's something there about his way and my way that's actually attracting strongly to each other in this learning-teaching situation? And I feel like that might be the special, like, there's a special, like, he's in our profile, he was looking for a woman with a sense of humor. And I actually answered that call because I guess I do feel like I have that. And he actually did say yesterday, I do. And I wanted the same thing. So, like, is that what the, you know what I mean? Like, that must be our special role, our personalities that drop away after we realize we're one.
In the beginning of the Course in Miracles, the meaning of miracles, it says that there are no chance, I forget the actual, you know, word for word, but there are no chance meetings. And I think if you remember this with all relationships, there are no chance meetings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All meetings are not by accident.
Oh, yeah. I'm making this me and him special. You're right. And he might not be, it's not that me and him are special, like more special than me and the other guys. They were not chance meetings either. But that was something I needed to happen in the perfect time. Right? Like there's no special relationship.
Right. Everything's in perfect timing, and there is no special. Relationship.
Not one of them trumps the other. Even if I choose to have a duration longer with John than I did with Tony, neither one will really trump the other because they're both necessary.
Well, it's for all meetings, all meetings with people, with your brothers, it is the destiny of all relationships. The purpose and the goal is to become holy, is to join in union with each other in a holy relationship. So there's no casual encounters, chance meetings.
So we're trying. We're finding justice in all of them.
Mm-hmm. Right. So as long
at oneness.
Yeah. So let's continue on to the trust.
Okay. You can read if you want.
This is the foundation on which their ability to fulfill their function rests. Perception is a result of learning. In fact, perception is learning because cause and effect are never separated. The teachers of God have trust in the world because they have learned it is not governed by the laws the world made up. It is governed by a power that is in them but not of them. It is this power that keeps all things safe. It is through this power that the teachers of God look on a forgiven world. When this power has once been experienced, it is impossible to trust one's own petty strength again. Who would attempt to fly with the tiny wings of a sparrow when the mighty power of an eagle has been given him? And who would place his faith in the shabby offerings of the ego when the gifts of God are laid before him? What is it that induces them to make the shift? I'll stop there if anyone has any input.
I'm confused about the fact still sometimes. But that must be because there's no time, right? There's no real, really.
I missed the first part of what you asked.
Oh, I said, I'm still confused about cause and effect. How about you, Beth? Are you confused by cause and effect being, I don't know, it's just something about the concept of it.
The part that I really liked was about the attempt to fly with the tiny wings of a sparrow when the mighty power of an eagle has been given him.
Can you read the note for that area, or isn't there one?
Look here. The power. Hold on here. Don't really see anything in there that pertains to that.
Okay, if someone wants to read, I'll pass.
Okay. Development of trust?
Yes.
Okay. Development of trust. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. First, they must go through what might be called a period of undoing. This need not be painful, but it is so experienced. It seems as if things are being taken away, and it is rarely understood initially that their lack of value is merely being recognized. How can lack of value be perceived unless the perceiver is in a position where he must see things in a different light? He is not yet at a point at which he can make the shift entirely internally. And so the plan will sometimes call for changes in what seem to be external circumstances. These changes are always helpful. When the teacher of God has learned that much, he goes on to the second stage. Next, the teacher of God must go through a period of sorting out. This is always somewhat difficult because having learned that the changes in his life are always helpful, he must now decide all things on the basis of whether they increase the helpfulness or hamper it. He will find that many, if not most, of the things he valued before will merely hinder his ability to transfer what he has learned to new situations as they arise. Because he has valued what is really valueless, he will not generalize the lesson for fear of loss and sacrifice. It takes great learning to understand that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. It is only to the extent to which they are helpful that any degree of reality should be accorded them in this world of illusion. The word value can apply to nothing else. The third stage through which the teacher of God must go can be called a period of relinquishment. If interpreted as giving up the desirable, it will engender enormous conflict. Few teachers of God escape this distinction.
Oh, hold on. I'm sorry. Mom, you might have to mute your phone. There's a lot of static or something. Okay.
Few teachers of God escape this distress entirely. There is, however, no point in sorting out the value from the valueless unless the next obvious step is taken. Therefore, the period of overlap is apt to be one in which the teacher of God feels called upon to sacrifice his own best interests on behalf of truth. He has not realized as yet how wholly impossible such a demand would be. He can learn this only as he actually does give up the valueless. Through this, he learns that where he anticipated grief, he finds a happy lightheartedness instead. Where he thought something was asked of him, he finds a gift bestowed on him. Now comes a period of settling down. This is a quiet time in which the teacher of God rests a while in reasonable peace. Now he consolidates his learning. Now he begins to see the transfer value of what he has learned. Its potential is literally staggering, and the teacher of God is now at the point in his progress at which he sees it as he sees in it his whole way out. Give up what you do not want and keep what you do. How simple is the obvious, and how easy to do. The teacher of God needs this period of respite. He has not yet come as far as he thinks. Yet when he is ready to go on, he goes with mighty companions beside him. Now he rests a while and gathers them before going on. He will not go on from here alone. Should I keep going?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. The next stage is indeed a period of unsettling. Now must the teacher of God understand that he did not really know what was valuable and what was valueless. All that he really learned so far was that he did not want the valueless and that he did want the valuable. Yet his own sorting out was meaningless in teaching him the difference. The idea of sacrifice, so central to his own thought system, had made it impossible for him to judge. He thought he learned willingness, but now he sees that he does not know what the willingness is for. And now he must attain a state that may remain impossible to reach for a long, long time. He must learn to lay all judgment aside and ask only what he really wants in every circumstance. Were not each step in this direction so heavily reinforced, it would be hard indeed. And finally, there is a period of achievement. It is here that learning is consolidated. Now what was seen as merely shadows before becomes solid gains to be counted on in all emergencies as well as tranquil times. Indeed, the tranquility is their result, the outcome of honest learning, consistency of thought, and full transfer. This is the stage of real peace, for here is heaven's state fully reflected. From here, the way to heaven is open and easy. In fact, it is here. Who would go anywhere if peace of mind is already complete? And who would seek to change tranquility for something more desirable? What could be more desirable than this? Wow, there's a lot in there.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there is a lot in here, and it's so beautiful, these different stages. And here we have, you know, each stage to actually show us, kind of like a map. And I think I really can identify with each stage here. You need to take yourself off mute, Mom. We can't hear you. I can hear you because you're in my house.
Sometimes they overlap too. Like there is no demarcation. There's no line of demarcation in the stages sometimes. They're overlapping, and you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You find out that it's not like, oh, I'm at this stage and I'm not at this one at all. No, you find out that you can resonate with this stage maybe, and then you resonate with something in the other stage, and even in the one past that one. But you know what I mean? Like until you fully grasp the whole meaning of that stage or whatever, that whole, you know, concept, then, you know what I mean? Then you haven't completed that stage. So you could be in more stages mm-hmm. that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those principles. Mm-hmm. Yep. So this is basically the process of elimination to illumination. In the first paragraph, first they must go through what might be called a period of undoing. So this is the first stage. And this is where we are learning to turn away from the ego through trusting that there is something else, right? So in my experience, there was just this knowing that there is something else. There must be something else. This can't be it. This can't be it. There's no way this is it. and you know, of course, miracles just fell in my lap as I asked those, as I realized or came to the realization or the awareness that there had to be another way. And it was so crazy that when A Course in Miracles fell in my lap, and I actually read that portion in the beginning where Helen and, Bill were speaking, and they're like, there's got to be another way. And it was her willingness to say, yes, you're right. So let's figure that out, right? Let's figure out that other way. And it doesn't need to be painful, but it is usually experienced that way because everything that you thought you believed in that was true now feels like, wow, who would I be without any of these beliefs? And so I did, it was a little painful for me. until I remembered to constantly call on Holy Spirit to, you know, I was to show me the truth, and so it need not be painful.
I remember us talking about that, and like when I went through it too, and I shared with you, oh my God, like I don't even know who I am anymore because this feels so insecure to me. Like to sit here and say that that all my identity is bullcrap, and I'm over here like, okay, like what? Well, like what is the whole freaking purpose then? And this doesn't feel like I've been moving in directions based on who I identify with myself to be. And now you're telling me that none of that is true. So now I have no direction. That was really messed up for me.
Yeah, but there's also this inner knowing that is still guiding you to continue forward because you know that this way of the ego is not the way, and that there's a lot of suffering, and that there's no peace. And there's just this inner knowing that there is a way out and I have to continue forward. And, of course, yes, it's great to have someone say, this is totally normal. I went through this too, you know,
and you did
versus
that with me.
Just reading it and saying, okay, here's a period of undoing. I'm not feeling safe, right? Now we have the next period of sorting out. So you're kind of sorting out all these ideas and everything that's starting to take place in your life. And in this stage, you need to see that everything is perfect, that everything is an opportunity, right? All it says here, understanding that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. So now you're kind of seeing the contrast and chaos where your initial belief was, oh, this isn't okay. It's, you know, complete judgment. And now you have to learn that it's all okay and that there's a reason why everything happens and everything is perfect. And you're like, how? Right? You're like, how could this be perfect? How? Yeah. Yeah. And then you go into the third stage, which is the period of relinquishment. So it says here, if this is interpreted as giving up the desirable, it will engender enormous conflict. Yes, so you think you have to give up something. And if you think you have to give up something, then there would be great conflict there. But in turn, Holy Spirit so gently comes and makes the way for you, and just things just fall away and they're undone so gently that there's not a feeling of loss. Because now you're gaining, you know, this peace, and it doesn't feel like sacrifice anymore. And you start to see that certain things, he can learn this only as he actually does give up the valueless, right? So now you start to see here that nothing is the meaning that I thought it was, which is in the workbook. You're giving up all your meaning because you're allowing Holy Spirit to bring you the true meaning of everything. And here you start to feel very excited, happy, lighthearted. Where he thought something was asked of him, he finds a gift bestowed on him. So in this stage, yes, you start to feel the expansion of your willingness to allow Holy Spirit to come in and show you what everything is for. Okay, so it's kind of like, okay, I accept that I have given everything a meaning and I'm no longer willing to do that and I'm choosing again. So now I'm excited because I'm starting to see these gifts.
I'm sorry, are we on relinquishment?
Yeah, the third stage, a period of relinquishment. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, that's the, yeah. I think this is where I'm overlapping into the maybe the next couple even. But this is where I'm, yeah, I'm totally stuck in this area because relinquishment, like I knew that I needed to start doing that. And I started this summer with relinquishing the idea that I wasn't safe.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I was doing something my will. So knowing that, trusting and the will of God and the truth and whatnot was something that I, you know, I knew that was
needed to develop.
I knew it was a stage that I was heading toward for definitely for my good. So I purposely chose to do a couple things that would help me to relinquish control, but I found that I still didn't do it. So, like, for example, going on the motorcycle, I actually got on it, but I still got on it with my will. I made a seatbelt. So there was a part of relinquishment there, too, because there was a very big part of me that knew that that seatbelt was not going to hold me on, or wasn't going to hold the bike up, that I actually had to trust, you know, that had to relinquish and trust. Still, there was still some, but it wasn't a full, I didn't give it fully up, or I kept an illusion. See, maybe I did fully relinquish, but because I know that that seatbelt actually was probably more of a danger than it was a help, but I held on to an illusion to help me get through. So I really didn't relinquish. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and actually, I'm pointed here to point this out since you're speaking of the overlap. So therefore, the period of overlap is apt to be one in which the teacher of God feels called upon to sacrifice his own best interests on behalf of truth. So it sounds like you're kind of in the middle of sacrificing your own best interests on behalf of the truth. Now, you don't need to sacrifice anything because sacrifice, let's talk about sacrifice and atonement. What are the differences? So,
I'm separated when I feel like I'm sacrificing. I'm not working like I'm not like trusting the relationship or relationships to be perfect, whole, and complete. I'm manipulating because I'm not trusting them. So a sacrifice would feel so. If I'm still in that manipulation, the sacrifice would totally feel like I would have dishonesty happening there. I would have separate because I'd be separating.
Yeah, and it would feel like a loss, right? So So why would we voluntarily lose something? Like choose to, offer ourselves a loss? We wouldn't do that, right? The ego would not do that. And right. Let me read here. It's from Circle of Atonement. And it defines sacrifice, so it defines the worldly meaning of sacrifice and then the A Course in Miracles meaning of sacrifice. So sacrifice, the act of voluntarily losing something in order to gain something else for the sake of a deity, for the sake of another person, or some worthy cause. Sacrifice is totally unknown to God, for he only gives without cost and knows nothing of loss. We think, however, that God, the Holy Spirit, and Jesus asks us to sacrifice all that we hold dear, especially the things of the body. This notion severely impedes the spiritual journey, for it makes the goal seem fearful. It is the ego, not God, that demands sacrifice. None of its pleasures come without the price of pain. It asks us to sacrifice totality to keep a little treasure for ourselves. Yet this treasure is only loss, loneliness, and fear. Thus, the ego asks total, not partial, sacrifice. The real meaning of sacrifice, then, is the cost of believing in illusions. Sacrifice is the basis of the special relationship, where we believe that true love demands as well as gives sacrifice. The belief makes God's love seem like the ultimate demand. Sacrificing for another only induces guilt, which is meant to obligate the other to sacrifice in return. Sacrifice is an idea of our making. Only we ask sacrifice of ourselves. Yet we project this onto God and the world, thinking that their demands are the cause of our deprivation. The Holy Spirit asks only the sacrifice of pain. We must give him not sacrifice, but the whole idea of sacrifice.
Mm. I like that. I feel like that. I feel like when you're in what God would, in God's, when you're at oneness, in atonement, you feel like everything is a benefit, everything. And so you're in this like perceptive place where like everything is acceptable. It's acceptable and it's for the goodness, because what God is always for the good of all in every situation.
Right. So condense this. So God doesn't know sacrifice.
Yeah.
Only we
right.
know sacrifice because we created sacrifice. The ego created sacrifice. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're in sacrifice, you are in separation and with your own
yeah.
little self, your
yeah.
own little painful self, right?
Painful.
And the atonement is choosing painful. Yeah. The atonement is the at-one-ment. So we never left God. The split never happened. It was, you know, it was because of religion that told us there was a split, and the solution was, you know, redemption through Jesus' salvation. So this is where we are choosing to trust, is in the
wow.
holy instant, as we choose the atonement, as we choose to be in complete communication with God, understanding that we never left God, that there is no such thing as sacrifice, and that is our doing. So we are willing to choose atonement, choose to be one with God in direct communication, and that we know that that is our only purpose as a body, to share and join with others in communication, in direct communication. That is a holy relationship, and that is trust.
Oh,
so
wow.
Anytime you're feeling that, you know, lonely, afraid, you know, then you have chosen to, lost loneliness and fear. You've chosen to believe in the ego
right.
and separate from God. And so then you just choose again. You just choose again.
Yeah.
In every now moment, and there is a holy instant. The holy instant is every now and moment that you can just choose again to remember your at-one-ment, your atonement, that you never left God. I can choose again, and I'm in direct communication when I'm choosing this, as I'm willing to trust. You know, the trust just happens as you're willing to choose the atonement, just remembering that you are one with God and you never left God.
Wow. What are you getting, Beth? I want to hear what Beth is getting.
No, I'm just listening. I have that book, The Glossary of the Terms of A Course in Miracles, and I love, you know, the whole description of sacrifice, what you read. You know, our idea of sacrifice and the Holy Spirit's idea of sacrifice, that you know, we give up pain.
Yeah. Mhm.
You know what I was thinking? I got this like this thing came to me where where I choose to separate when I'm full awareness right at the moment here, that I'm choosing to separate when I have asthma. Asthma is it feels like a huge threat to my life, my existence. And I'm choosing to separate. Oh my gosh. And I remember having like coming to this, like, I just resist, and I can't breathe. And I'm doing everything possible in my manipulations and my, without trusting God at all, but in my own will to help myself live and breathe. And it got really exhausting at one time for me. And I thought, you know what, this is probably just it. And there's really, I just can't fight this anymore. It just feels like it's exhausting, and I'm just going to let this go. And I even have resistance talking about this because I know it's like a huge, I just became very aware that I was like in sacrifice and I was in just this place of like, you know, of separation. And now when I did that, I said, I surrender to whatever it is. If this is my transition time, then this is just going to have to be it. I'm just tired of it. And I immediately went to sleep thinking, well, it's possible that I will wake up or I will not. And it was the actual shift and turning point to when I union, when I became one, when I surrendered, what did you call it this morning, Debbie? Instead of surrender.
In the holy instant, instead of surrender, your just willingness. Because surrender
willing.
Makes it feel willing like you have to do something. There's something that you have to do. So the ego doesn't like to have to give up something, right? Would even be to surrender. So as long as you're willing, your willingness, that doesn't feel like it's a sacrifice. You just have to be willing, you know.
And at the time, I remember saying, I just surrender to whatever happens, happens. And I remember, but before I did fall asleep, I was at such a peace. So I must have, I must have recognized the willingness to just let it go. And I fell asleep. And that was the shift. I felt great. The next day I was like, I was on my way back. It was an instant that I stopped resisting and I could breathe.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, so the atonement, so the certain in the circle of atonement, the root meaning of the atonement is the reconciliation of God and his estranged children, the recovering of at-one-ment, not
his will.
The state of at-one-ment.
Is joining his will, which knows no, it knows no suffering, it knows no pain, no physical suffering, no physical pain, no mental suffering, no mental pain, no emotional suffering, no emotional pain. It knows none of that. It is pure love that is life. It's the only right reason that we exist. It's his will that we're willing to join. Always his will. Even he gave us our own will, but that's really an illusion. But it's the illusion to realize that because that we separated and now we can rejoin in peace.
Yeah, it says here atonement is achieved by the realization that we never left God, that the split was an illusion, that no sin was committed and no payment necessary. Atonement is thus the undoing of a split that never occurred, the way back to what was never lost. The atonement releases us from all that stands between us and God, guilt, fear, the past, and all the illusions. through its realization that all this has never been. Jesus made this principle accessible to us through his resurrection, not his death. This placed him in charge of the atonement. Atonement is one of the major terms in the Course and has many aspects. So first, it is a principle that the separation or fall never really occurred. In this sense, it is the final lesson. Number two, it is a power which, when we accept it, comes into our minds and heals our thinking. The miracle is thus the expression of the atonement. Number three, it is a plan for the return of all God's sons, a plan based on the atonement principle. And number four, it is a process in which the sonship progressively approaches the final reunion with God.
That's God's will right there. And that's the one that we realize that it is the only will. That's the only will that's going to work for us, that feels peace, that feels love, that feels understood, that's just the joy, the state of being. It's just home.
Yeah, it is the purpose. It's the goal to which the plan and process aspire.
And it feels absolutely like perfect. It just feels so good, right? I mean, good is putting it lightly.
Let me read accepting the atonement for oneself. One more minute, and then we'll open it up if anyone wants to say anything. So accepting the atonement for oneself, accepting the healing of your own thinking, accepting right-mindedness into your mind, even if only briefly, which leads directly and automatically to extending healing to others. Accepting healing is the precondition for extending healing, for you must have before you can give. This concept is solely responsible of the miracle worker. Because once the atonement is allowed in your mind, it will automatically extend through you and give miracles to others unless you block it. Thus, rather than implying that others are of no concern to you, this idea tells you how you can truly be helpful to them. You can accept atonement by changing your perception of self or others, as well as by joining with your holy relationship partner. So in all things, it's choosing in every moment within that holy instant, within that instant, to truly join with God and be in communication is choosing and accepting the atonement for yourself.
I just got a thought about when you said in all things. I actually have to say in all, I feel like, well, it wasn't even a thought. What came to me very fast was, in all relationships, since I've accepted that all relationships are all there truly is that has value. The only value in life. The value list is everything else.
I think for me, it's very important that I understand these principles. So my priority is to understand these principles and practically apply these principles so that my relationships can all be holy.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're at 10 o'clock. Did you want to add anything, Beth?
No, I think it was, I loved it all. It was very meaningful.
Yeah,
I'm sure, but I feel like since we were guided to do that, was it just like, did it feel like just a message of, you know, did it feel like a message of what you needed, like your soul needed, Beth?
I think so. I just believe that wherever Holy Spirit takes us, when we're together, that's exactly where we need to be.
Yeah, for sure. Trusting, huh?
Yeah, and that's it. My ego mind likes everything to be planned and organized and go in order, and I'm always gently reminded that everything is perfect and it does not have to go in order because it's already in perfect order. So why am I trying to take everything out of order and put it back into order in my ego mind? Wouldn't make sense. Not one bit.
No.
Beautiful. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you for letting me join.
So grateful.
Yes, thank you, Spirit.
Thankful for your perceptions and your joining.
Well, I appreciate it very much.
Beautiful. And I just want to take the time for you know, giving gratitude to Holy Spirit. Thank you all the time and for such true perspective and support and joining and sharing with our brothers so that, you know, so that we can be truly helpful in our lives. And that is the only purpose, to always be truly helpful. And I'm so thankful and grateful. And so it is. And so I hope you all have a beautiful and blessed day with lots of miracles and true perspective.
Yes, I hope we all, I hope we the one, feel that connection to each other and, like, just knowing there's no separation from each other. We the one. I love you. I love myself.
I love you and I love myself, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Love you all.
Love you all. Bye.
Love you. Bye.